Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ramble.
Emilio!
Welcome to Guilty Pleasures. Today we are talking about, of course, the one and only. Oh yeah, bob your head while you do it.
I thought you were gonna do What Is Love, but you can't.
Oh, we can't? We can do 30 seconds.
Do 30 seconds?
At least.
We're talking about Night at the Roxbury, and joining us in the studio, we have a very special guest, the creator of Captain Laserhawk and Castlevania. We have Mr. Adi Shankar. Hello.
Hello.
Nice. Welcome to the podcast.
This is one of the most delightfully stupid movies that has ever been made. And right before we started recording, I'm just going to get right into it because you said this is your favorite movie.
Yes, absolutely. It's my favorite movie. And for years, you know, if you look through my filmography, it tends to be like lone badass with a weapon fighting in a, you know, some sort of dystopian thing. And so I would lie for years, right? I would tell people RoboCop's my favorite movie, Escape from New York.
Great choices.
You know, just that, just to stay in genre and on brand. And don't get me wrong, I do dig all those movies, but this Night at the Roxbury is actually, has always been my favorite movie.
To be fair, it does feel like Blade. It feels like the beginning, the opening sequence
of
Blade.
It totally is. It's 100%.
Night of the Roxbury is Blade.
Is that the title of this
episode? Night of the Roxbury probably happened in the Blade universe, and they were just not in the Blood Club. I think that
they weren't aware of the action happening.
They were aware of the club, but they didn't go.
They couldn't get in.
Well, Blade was happening in New York. This was LA.
This is LA. So they would love to go to that club, I'm sure.
Same timelines. Got it.
For sure. The exact same.
Wow. If we can get a Chris Kattan cameo in the new Mahershala Ali Blade,
oh my God.
I would pay untold.
He's just in the background, just bobbing his head. And he doesn't even have to. You don't even have to see his face.
Yeah.
He's just like facing the bar.
Yeah.
This was early 2000s or late 90s.
I think when I was in high school, I remember this. So it had to be like 2006.
Okay.
No.
Earlier?
Definitely before that. Yeah, because I used to watch it like every week in high school. So I was in, so like late 90s, like.
Oh, wow.
I just remember this era of SNL. Like every generation has their era. And this was my era.
This was your era.
And these people were fucking gods
Because this is when.
And I stand by it.
Yeah, this is when SNL, we can fully see the entire scope of their career. All of the SNL cast members here.
Totally.
It's just like you got Molly Shannon, Chris Kattan, and Will Ferrell.
Sherry O'Terry, maybe the funniest human to ever exist.
Yeah.
What's my girl's name? Sorry.
She was the cop in this. Sorry about that.
Oh, you have
Jennifer Coolidge in a small role.
Jennifer Coolidge, pre-voice.
Wait, pre-face, motherfucker. That's what I'm talking about.
Dude, Eva Mendes is in it.
Jennifer Coolidge plays Hottie Cop. That is her name in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she does a very good job. I mean, she really is believable in that role, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's a hottie cop.
Like, the movie hinges, or not the movie hinges, the satisfaction of the ending hinges on her being believable when she, right?
Yeah. Towards the end, there's a big
I need to know. Okay, go back and tell me the year is 1990/early 2000 something. You see this movie for the first time, and then continue to watch it.
Yeah.
What does this movie mean to you? Why do you love it so? You also asked, you're like, how long do I have to talk?
So I didn't grow up in America, right? Okay. I was born in India, grew up between Hong Kong and Singapore. I immigrated here by myself when I was like, 15. I was like 2 days before 9/11, right?
Oh, bad.
So it was kind of weird. That was weird. It's kind of funny.
You're like, oh, America.
It's kind of funny.
God damn it. Oh, America.
Oh boy.
So living in Hong Kong, I didn't have access to American television. You had some of it, right? So I'd watch like World Wrestling Federation, but a lot of it was
you were looking for us to give you other things, but I have no idea what made it through.
WWE.
WWE. It used to be called WWF. Yeah. But I would like torrent certain things, and SNL was
Pirates Babe.
It would be some SNL sketches.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what SNL was, by the way.
You just knew the letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, but from like the torrent site, right? Where it's like SNL. You're like, what is SNL? But, this is Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh.
Or so I knew these specific sketches.
Yeah,
so,
but not like this.
But
show
I didn't know that there was a show, and I didn't understand. And then I found these sketches about these two guys who'd party and they'd nod their heads. And I thought it was really, really funny.
It is such a simple bit, and it is so okay. We'll go.
It's a simple bit, and actually, the first one I watched, the first sketch was the two guys and Jim Carrey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I may have been the first. I tried to find it this morning and I couldn't.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, cut to I'm in America. I'm like walking around the grocery store, which was like a crazy experience because the grocery store was like huge.
Yeah.
And you're like,
it's
whoa.
The biggest store of all time. Yeah.
And I'm actually walking around looking for World Wrestling Federation action figures. Right. So I'm like walking around and then I see Night at the Roxbury, I see a DVD, and I'm like, whoa, it's the two guys. It's the two guys.
Oh, wow.
I know these motherfuckers.
I'm like, this is sick.
Yeah.
So I like bought it, and then I went home, or back to the dorm, whatever.
Garrick, you're too good at the head bob.
Right. I start watching it. I start watching it, and I thought it was awesome. Now, again, if you're not from this country, you don't kind of get some of the cultural nuances and the references and stuff. And there's also a bias that you have, right? A group think when you're from a society. Mm-hmm. So to me, I perceive this as a story of these two awesome dudes who, like, were way
underdogs.
Too awesome. Were way too awesome for the people around them.
Oh, they just they weren't understood.
Yeah, they were like misunderstood, and I'm like, they're like
this.
Way too cool for school.
Oh my god!
And everyone
this is like
else
a
is too lame.
Of age tale
right.
for
totally.
Two guys stepping
totally.
Into their power.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
So then I was like,
you just had the inverse reading. You're like, these guys are so fucking cool.
Yeah,
you
the comedy
it.
Is that the world doesn't get them
exactly, and that's.
How often did you wear a black turtleneck, white chain, and just a jacket after that?
Shiny jacket.
I mean, I never emulated them, but that was kind of how I always rolled.
Because he wasn't cool enough.
Yeah,
how I rolled. Because we were moving around from society to society, so like cultural norms were always different, right? Like from school to school, culture to culture, society to society. There was no like common thread as this is universally cool. So I always just did my own thing.
Oh, cool.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't until I was watching the movie again for like the 20th time with these guys. And you know, the scene where they're listening to Staying Alive and they're walking around. Right. And I point to one of the dudes and I'm like, I have those shoes.
Oh my god!
And he looks at me. He's like, "Whoa!" He's like, "Stop the movie." Yeah. And so I was watching with like five or six guys, maybe more. Yeah. And they're like, "Wait, stop the movie." They're like, "What is this movie about?" And I'm like, "And I told them this. I'm like, it's about these two awesome dudes, and like society is so like rigid and fitting into this box.
Sweet dad, that, making friends.
That." They're not understood, right?
Yeah.
But at the end, like they triumph. They're triumphant.
Yeah.
They live their dreams.
They live their dreams.
Wow. Yeah.
It like works out for them. They end
the
up with
American
a fucking nightclub.
Dream.
So it's like everyone else sucks.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And my friend was like, and they were like, no, dude, that's not what the movie's about. The movie's like making fun of these two dudes. Oh,
you're starting to Roxbury pill me, though. I kind of believe your version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's just like, just let people be people and then they could have a club that where the outside is the inside and inside is the outside.
Which, by the way, I am desperate to go to that club.
Dying for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So wait, after you found out that this was like that being made fun of, how did you feel about it? Were you in denial?
No, I was just like, okay, whatever. And then it was a little weird, and this is kind of a plot twist. I then realized the two guys that were telling me that the guys weren't cool were like almost exactly the two guys from the movie.
There you go.
Okay.
Haters all gonna right. hate.
Yeah.
It was very weird. Actually, I didn't see the connection. One of the guy's girlfriend pointed out to me.
Yeah.
Because me and her used to watch it, and then she's like, I don't want to say their names out loud because that's mean.
But, we've had to bleep so many names on this.
Yeah, they were like literally exactly like the Butabi brothers, these two dudes.
Yeah.
They were obsessed with getting in the club. Like,
there's no one lamer in the universe than that person.
Yeah, than somebody being like, they're making fun of them. They're just blah, blah, blah. And then not realizing that you are also that person. Not having
it was very
awareness.
Weird. It's like some sort of like, like a self-help guru could probably do some like.
Yeah, it's very Freudian.
Right, 100%. Yeah.
Maybe they secretly hate themselves or something. I don't want to, talk about your friends.
But no, I actually went to the club with these two dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a interesting experience because they
were
knew
their dance
so
moves
much.
Like?
Yeah.
Pardon?
What were their dance moves like?
They were too cool to dance. No, they were too cool. They were too cool to dance.
Okay, well, then I don't want nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to do a synopsis, but also,
can I do it?
Please.
Oh, go for it.
This movie is about two brothers. You remember that movie, Step Brothers? You saw it? Will Ferrell? This is them.
Johnson
but
Riley.
As teenagers.
Yeah.
They live in Los Angeles, and they're fucking nasty, fucking male club rats. Their dreams? To be a Hollywood club owner. Their dicks? Never been sucked.
Nope.
This movie?
Never been
Night
kissed.
At the Roxbury.
That's your synopsis? Bravo.
Really good. I continue to crush on this show.
Really
podcast.
Good.
Well, they're super innocent, right?
Yeah.
I feel like
innocent.
That adds to all of it. Like,
They never had their dicks sucked.
They're kids.
Yeah.
They are
they're
kids who want to be cool so desperately. I'll tell you the revelation that I had this morning. Okay, so we all know the Night at the Rock. I think we all know Night at the Roxbury. They're bobbing their heads to What is Love, Baby Don't Hurt Me.
Yeah.
They do the little nose move. Yeah. And I'm watching it and I'm like, oh fuck, it's cocaine.
Yeah.
Duh!
Yeah, but they don't know it's cocaine.
They don't know it's cocaine.
Like, I didn't know.
They just thought that it's things people do.
I was today years old watching the movie, and I'm like, oh my God, this sketch was just a riff on the coked up dudes at the club.
Yeah, absolutely.
And think of SNL, like this is where the characters of this started, correct?
Yeah.
This was like was this the first feature length?
No.
It's Wayne's, SNL
Wayne's
character.
World.
Mm-hmm. Wayne's World was
Wayne's
before
World.
That. So
and
they
I
had,
actually
had
think,
success with that.
But this,
sort of, but I actually feel like this movie was unfairly criticized by critics at the time because it has a horrible reviews.
It's like
11%.
Yeah.
on Rotten Tomatoes.
There was a bias against SNL skits turned into
for a long
movies.
Time.
Yeah.
Well, actually, what do you mean for a long time? It has continued. They've never broken the quote-unquote curse. Like, Wayne's World is the exception, but you've got this. Ladies Man, sort of Hot Rod. It wasn't a sketch, but it was a Lorne Michaels production.
Yeah.
Superstar,
which is fucking hilarious.
So funny.
That one we should do on
a lot of them are just funny, and people are just being haters. They just
but
don't want to.
Totally. Yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of, like, for my growing up with this movie, my best friend, like, all my best stoner friends fucking loved this movie. And I didn't remember a single line of it because I was always so fucking high in high school. When I rewatched it today, it was like watching it for the first time. I was like, I don't remember any of that. Like, I didn't know Jennifer Coolidge was in it.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten. But it's so quotable. This was how I learned about that it was an SNL sketch. Like, to me.
Oh, you knew this first.
Yes, I knew this first. I knew Superstar first. Yeah. I knew, like, I'm in that weird age era. You're an old man internally, so you don't count. But, like, I wasn't old enough to be watching SNL yet regularly. Mm. Like, I was going to bed at 9:30. Like, I wasn't cool. And so through that, then I started to look up the YouTube clips, and that's when I started to learn about SNL.
This era of SNL movies, or SNL nailed it.
Sketches.
I'm a professional.
Sketches.
Turn to movies was wildly horny as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was like they were like, we're going to do our sketch as a film, but we're going to do everything we can't do on TV. We're going to talk about fucking and sucking.
Yeah.
It's just I'm going to take a detour from this movie to say, first of all, this is the first time that I had seen it.
Oh, wow.
Can you believe?
Completion. Yeah. Because I was not allowed to watch these movies for whatever reason. I know the reason. I was desperate to see the movie The Ladies Man. I loved the sketch on SNL. I thought it was so funny. And so I'm staying at my grandma's house. Me, Grammy, and Steffi, my sister, we go out to a video rental store, and I convince Grammy that we should rent The Ladies' Man.
Oh, boy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And she's like, what's it about? And I'm like, oh, it's a family-friendly film. I tell her it's all fair game. I hide the fact that it's rated R.
Yeah.
We go back to Grammy's house, snuggled up in Manhattan. We get into Grammy's bed.
No. Laying in
Grammy's. I'm like 10 years old or something. Grammy in the middle, me on one side, my little baby sis on the other. We start the movie. The lady, I know this is not what this episode's about.
No, but please go.
The movie begins. Yeah. With the ladies' man having an affair with and being caught. Some dude comes home and catches his wife sleeping with the ladies' man. But it is the most comical, like, woman on top, riding topless, yeah, like a parody of porn, yeah, bouncing up and down. And so Grammy freaks
oh,
out.
Of course.
Little baby Zach runs to the VHS. He's like, oh no, it's just this scene. Press fast forward, but it's a VHS player. So instead of fast forwarding to the next scene, it just does double time with a chipmunk sound. So now I'm hearing the moans, wow, of a woman having
that's
sex.
Amazing.
Instead of it's bouncing back. And
that happened to me every time I took my parents to watch an American movie.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Every single fucking time.
Nothing worse than sitting next to your mom or dad during a sex scene.
I'm 33. Yeah. I did that last week with my dad, and I was like, nah, I gotta get out.
I love a parent with like a sense of humor that will like slowly look at their kid and be like, you want me to be watching this with you?
Okay, do you remember in Her, the Spike Jonze movie,
when
he finally, like, I guess, has sex with his cell phone? It's like the movie cuts to black and you just hear Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson's voices, like,
right.
I guess we're talking about sex a lot in this episode, but welcome to the show. Yeah, and they are like moaning together, and it's like really uncomfortable, but also like I'm transfixed by this movie. And my dad leans over and goes, "Well, this is a scene, huh?" And I'm like, I crawl. Like, I felt his hot breath in my ear.
Why did you whisper that to me, Dad? God. That's disgusting.
I still can feel it. It Okay, back to Night at the Roxbury.
Back to Night at the Roxbury. I did meet Chris Kattan in Indianapolis.
Huge.
Very, very big deal for me.
Huge.
Very, very big deal for little Garrick. But he was doing a headlining show at Helium, and I was doing a show upstairs in like the little small room, and He was outside before and he went up and I met him, a big fan, blah, 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 blah. But when he went up, the first 5 minutes of his set is him just being like, okay, guys, play it. And then they play the music and then he does the shit with his head. And then they're like, they play what is love
people
or whatever.
Go nuts.
And everybody goes fucking crazy.
Oh my God.
And then he's like, okay, thank you. All right. Now that that's over with, I can do my set.
Unreal.
But
then
it's amazing.
His whole thing is just him.
I would kill to see him do that.
It's so good.
Yeah.
He really steals the show here.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah,
like just the like the moments in between moments.
Yeah,
just the moments in between moments. Like, and I'm not going to try to imitate him.
Please do.
Yeah, please.
Where he's just like,
you know what I mean, his little jaw
where he's
move.
Like, you know, he's just, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a vulnerability to it, like because he's
100%.
Playing someone who has coke jaw, but doesn't know he has coke jaw.
Right.
Now
he
but,
has coke jaw.
But there's like you can see the hurt child.
100%.
Yeah.
You know. Also, this to me was an immigrant story.
Oh.
Right.
Go on.
Interesting.
Please,
please
go on.
Yeah.
No, it's like an immigrant story. It's like the father doesn't understand. The kid has dreams, but he's being kind of confined to work in like
the
family business.
Yeah. Yes.
And he's going to have an arranged marriage with
the
neighbor. Like this was literally my life, right? This is kind of what I escaped
to
come to America.
Okay.
Which
Stop.
I only pieced this together last night when I was watching it. I'm like,
my jaw is on the ground.
This was
you're right.
this was literally like, you know, whenever I'd go home, they'd be like, so here's your future. And I'm like, oh, fuck that. I'm going back to America. It's free there. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
I'm going back to watch Night at the Roxbury with my homies in the dorm room.
There is, you know, this is Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell's first starring role in a film.
Wild.
And it is, I want to take a long moment to give them both their flowers. Now, Will Ferrell, we all know, and he is as funny as you can imagine in this movie. He's always been so funny.
Right.
But Chris Kattan is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And pound for pound, I think just one of the funniest pure humans that we've ever had.
1,000%. Like, it kind of blows my mind. And again, I'm not in comedy. Right?
Yeah.
But it blows my mind that Will Ferrell went on to have
everything.
Everything, right?
The fact that this
and then Corky Romano and then Chris Kattan effectively disappeared.
Yeah. Well, you have two bombs and that's what'll happen. Corky Romano did not do well. And boom.
That's it.
I also feel like Ben Stiller came in and kind of, they have like a similar energy, right? Because look, and Ben Stiller directed Zoolander, so this isn't a fair comparison, but you could have totally seen Chris Kattan playing Zoolander.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Oh my God, he would be an incredible one.
He would have crushed a Zoolander.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes me, Chris Kattan's, I don't want to say lack of success, but like him falling off.
His lack
of superstardom makes me feel anger towards everybody else that was around him, where they're just like, oh, we're going to stifle the person who is obviously the funniest in the
100%,
room.
100%.
Like, you didn't kill. We had this conversation last week.
Maybe even to like rephrase it, it's not like a lack of superstardom. It's kind of like when someone's talent versus their output are not commensurate.
Right. Yeah,
looking at their, like, at Will Ferrell's filmography. And again, I am a humongous Will Ferrell fan, I don't mean this to take away from Will Ferrell.
Right.
But he played the villain in Zoolander.
Yeah.
That was obviously a huge moment for him. But then 2 years later, Old School. And that was a breakout smash hit where he was like the Zach Galifianakis and Hangover type explosion.
Yeah.
And that is the difference between being a superstar and being the dude from Corky Romano.
But was it, what happened? When was Elf? When did Elf come out? Because I remember that was
Elf was the same year. God, what a year.
Yeah, that was huge. Because I remember Elf.
You know really what it was? He had a good agent.
Yeah.
He had a better agent.
And you know, that's what I thought was so interesting about this movie was that Chris Kattan, like, Will Ferrell is great, but he's not the funniest in this movie. And there's almost like and maybe it's also his character, but there's a babiness to him. Like, his confidence isn't as big on camera in the way that like he could be big with sketches and the way we had maybe seen him on SNL. But it was so fascinating, just to see such a young Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And then to see like a little bit of a smaller Will Ferrell.
A much smaller Will Ferrell.
A little outshined.
It's also him just knowing his role to the point where he's like just straighten down the cannon, like, I am going to be a doofus. And if a doofus doesn't make big motions, then I'm not going to do
that. He was Chris Kattan's bitch, his side boy. Like, he was like, I'm going to play the role. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of like.
Also, like, feel like Will Ferrell gets. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, no.
I feel like Will Ferrell, just his comedy type, he gets funnier the older he gets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Because he behaves in a way
like
that he doesn't look like, right?
Yeah.
The way
he
looks versus the way he acts. He looks like a dude who works in like middle management at an insurance company, right?
Yeah, I think that's very well observed.
So this was like almost, like even in this movie, he looks older than he plays, and there's part of the...
That's what he always does.
Right.
Yeah, he's a grown-up, but he's a kid, mentally.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Kattan, too, I'm just trying to think, is what Chris Kattan the best at? Is there a world where that ever would have translated to movies?
1,000%.
Because I think about him, like, he was great at like Mango and throwing himself into these big, really, really goofy characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was an episode of SNL. Okay. Fun fact. I was on an episode of SNL.
To remind us.
He played Gollum. Chris Kattan played Gollum in that episode.
Yeah.
And like no one else can do that.
Yeah. He's got a he has a malleable comedy face. Like just what you were saying, the small jaw movements, like the big eyes, it translates so well on TV. And I almost wonder if it was like he's too big for movies. Like, was he just too caricature at that time? Like, he came too early because that became cooler later.
Yeah.
Also, but he would have, you know, been slotted into, you look at movies like Zoolander, Anchorman, all of these comedies that came right after this this movie dropped.
Maybe he just had a massive coke problem, guys, and we're just like trying to sit him in somewhere. I'm just saying, like, we're all like, what's the problem? It's like, well, maybe there was something going on behind the scenes we don't know about, you know?
That's fair.
You should ask him next time you see him.
I won't.
Oh, okay.
So thinking about specific scenes too, there's this one great scene where the two of them are simultaneously losing their virginities. And he is... Why did I get such a big chuckle?
Oh, it's just such a funny scene.
They're so used to just playing their pickup line game
and
being rejected that finally being in a...
What is that?
It's the sound of an ambulance.
It's an ambulance.
Coming to take me away because the sight of you stopped my heart. You're like...
Do you like blueberries or strawberries? Why? I want to know what kind of pancakes to order you in the morning.
Is that a mirror in your pocket? Because I can see myself in your pants.
By the way, the blueberry strawberry line, I was like,
that's pretty good.
That's a bar.
That's just kindness. Yeah. That's just kindness.
Honestly, if a man asked me, see ya. Fucking love you. Marry me. But that was so funny because you'd never seen where a character had gotten that far. And any other movie of that time would have had him fumbling the condom or like coming really fast or whatever. But the fact that they literally couldn't even have sex because they didn't know how to go to the next step
was
just the act of like one-upping the joke. Like it just kept one-upping.
They were so used to rejection as well. Yeah. When someone said yes.
They couldn't take it.
They were like, wait, what?
It's also so funny because that style of joke is kind of having like a resurgence on Twitter where people are showing their worst DMs and it's just from like, it's like OnlyFans models and then guys being like, hey, what's up? And then the girl responds, she's like, hi. And he's like, oh, I didn't know I'd get this far. Have a nice day. It's so fucking funny. I love every single one of them that I've been seeing.
Can I just say that's also like the basis of troll behavior? Anytime I've responded back to a mean or like nasty or misogynistic comment, they've been like, oh my God, I actually love you. I'm so sorry.
I was just having a bad day. Yeah. You're wonderful.
Yeah. I hope you don't mind. And I'm like, that was...
It's very weird.
Shut up.
Yeah.
When she asks, is this your first time? The way that Chris Kattan plays that, where he goes, huh, that's hilarious. Did you hear that? And he starts calling out to Will Ferrell and then is crawling back on the bed. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I keep harping on this, but I feel like during this era, there was a huge bias against physical comedy.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
During this era?
During this era, like when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Because even that, right? Like, you guys are comedians.
Yeah.
You can look at this and go, whoa, this is fucking great. Like just the physical comedy that's brought into every scene. Because it's not like this movie had like insane Michael Bay style camera moves, right?
It was
shot like a TV show. It was shot like an episode of Saturday Night Live, right? It's kind of a static camera and then go perform. So it really hinges on the performers to create all the movement in the scene, right? That is hard. That is a difficult style of comedy, which I feel like historically was almost looked down upon by the critics. It's like in favor of this kind of like subtle Al Pacino style of acting.
That's so weird because everybody still hates physical comedy,
right?
Which is interesting because I think that's
where comedy came from.
Where it came from,
like Buster Keaton. Buster Keaton.
It's the only thing that's really, really funny nowadays. Whenever you see it, like with Bottoms, it's like that's full of physical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you harp back to that this era in general, it's really weird that they weren't applauding it, given how much you see it.
I think part of the reason, and I don't want to go too inside baseball here, is so comedies generally only had an American or a Western audience. You couldn't distribute them internationally the way you could, like an action movie, like Speed.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Speed plays everywhere in the world. Everyone gets the plot. Physical comedies translated internationally. Right. So you had physical comedies would play everywhere in the world. So you had like schlocky physical comedies being made for the international marketplace.
Yeah.
And maybe, and I don't know, maybe this was an inability to differentiate, right? Yeah. So it's like, oh, all physical comedy is bad. Just like all action movies are are low rate, or all horror movies. Because you see this also with horror movies during the era, right? Like all horror movies, they must be B, C, D movies.
Sure. Yeah,
that's a good point. And I think we also... I don't know who the they is, if it's critics or just general perception at large, but there's this assumption that subtlety is what should be celebrated, and that, you know, that's a serious film and therefore that's good.
Yes.
Yeah. And so now the inverse of that, things that are big or people who are gifted with their bodies, that is unserious and therefore unworthy of praise. But you look at, so like you mentioned Buster Keaton, right? That once upon a time was praised. Jackie Chan, I know people don't like him right now because he was a terrible person to his children, but like he was not celebrated as the most purely gifted performer that he was, and that's also because by the time that he crossed over, then he was in like Shanghai Nights and shitty US movies.
But
that type of performance is, I mean, it's why Michelle Yeoh won and deserved to win. Like when you can do things with your body, you unlock another dimensionality of storytelling.
Totally.
I feel like
1,000%, dude. 1,000%. Like it's almost like there was a bias, and Charlie Chaplin escaped it, but there's a bias.
I don't know how.
But it's like if you could do multiple things, you were almost punished for it.
Mm. I'm still punished for it. Could tell my agents, being a 360 creator, right? Like they want you to be one thing.
Yeah, 100%.
They want you to have a niche and like live and die on that
hill. I similarly am too good at physical comedy and stunts. It's really helped
professional,
me back.
Professional wrestlers go through this, right? Because they're effectively, they're actors, they're stunt people, they're writers, they write their own, like a lot of them write their own stuff. Mm-hmm. They're costume designers, they're creating the character, right?
Yeah.
And then you go out there and it's like, okay, well, you're, you know, SAG doesn't want you. The stunt people, it's like you're kind of rejected by all the niches.
Yeah. It's really funny because like thinking about like Sylvester Stallone and like how hard he had to fight to be Rocky after writing Rocky.
Right,
they're
right.
Like, well, you're a writer, so you can't be the lead of this movie. He's like, I have to be. Wow. I'm the only one that could do this.
And then, now they're like, if you didn't write it, do you even have a personal connection to it?
Right,
like,
exactly.
Why should you be the developer of this project?
Right. It's very, it's very, I mean, it's shifted to a lot of auteurship, you know, which is, I mean, good and bad.
Real quick, just some things to shout out about this movie. It's got some serious Clueless crossover, which is always exciting for me.
It does?
It does. So
Amy Heckerling
produced the movie, which to me, you know that meme where the girl's like, Beyonce?
Yeah.
When I saw Amy Heckerling's name in the credits, that was like, that is you know that tweet where it's like the one word that makes people lose their minds in the bedroom? It, for me, it's her name. when I see that in a movie, I
that's
lean
amazing.
The fuck forward.
That's amazing.
You have Dan Hedaya, who is the dad in Clueless. He's the dad here. I think
he's legend.
The greatest movie dad to ever live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is mean. He is serious.
He's got a hairy chest and you know it.
Oh,
you
he's
know?
Hairy.
Of he's course. Just got like a dad
he's burly.
Chest.
Yeah. Gray
like I
hair,
trust him
black
with my
mustache.
Life.
But you could also like see the hardship in his eyes, right? You could
back to the immigrant tale.
Right, you can see the life he built brick by brick and why he's disappointed in his kids, right?
For the love of God, please don't try to do what you're trying to do.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then that conversation with Richard Grieco where he like...
This is so good.
Where he fucking realizes that he's really fighting himself and he like lets go. He really... You see him physically let go and he's like, oh my God.
The end of the end of the movie as like just a joke throwaway, Richard Grieco psychoanalyzes this dad character and is like, you hate your son because you're fighting against yourself. He goes, my God, Richard Grieco, you're right. And it's so insightful and deep, and it has no reason to be.
And because of this movie, I thought Richard Grieco was like a huge like megastar.
Oh,
right, because I like you don't know
that
like,
they're
who's who's who, and just a weird. So
Richard Grieco, who our audience listening now probably has no idea who the fuck he is, was not Johnny Depp in the original 21 Jump Street TV show. And he plays himself in this movie, and what a treat it is.
It's awesome.
With Emilio Estevez from Mighty Ducks.
He's not in it, though.
No, but they talk about him. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Oh, right. Constantly.
You made me scared that I like spaced out.
Emilio Estevez? No.
How long have you guys lived in L.A.?
About 10 years.
10 years?
And I'll tell you
14.
That when I moved to L.A., mm-hmm. Oh, God, it's been actually more than 10 years. Who gives a shit? Like, trying to get into those clubs is what I felt I was supposed to do.
Ugh.
And I was in my early 20s, and I had nothing to offer anybody.
Right.
And really, like, I see myself in these guys in a way that I don't want to.
That's amazing.
Because everyone has we have all been the one outside of the club that can't get in. We've all been there, whether it was whoops, our friend forgot to put us on the list, or, I don't want to go to this fucking thing. Mm-hmm. But, like, we all know that feeling of not being cool enough to get in. But these guys take it to a degree where you're like, am I rooting for them because they're so naive and they really don't know?
Or is it so because, cool that society doesn't understand them?
Or is it they're finally achieving the dream that I couldn't get in the club?
Mm.
Yeah, psychoanalyze that, bitches. All three of you just looked up to the sky. Like, huh.
I want you to sit with
also
that.
Also remembered. Yeah. So one of those two guys who's like obsessed from the school I went to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a callback to the friends that we
were with. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was like in L.A. So I was like producing like big movies in my 20s. And he came to the club with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see just the emotions. It was like hatred. Jealousy, envy. This was like his
dream.
This was his dream.
Yeah.
And you're living it.
And he would get more. He got more and more angry as the night progressed. I'm trying to not come off as douchey.
No.
But at one point, someone came up and they were like, "Hey, Chris Pine's here. You guys should say what's up."
So it's like your favorite Chris.
Yeah, it's the best Chris.
It's so
the
best.
No, Chris. Arguable.
It's Chris really Prime is what I call him.
Chris Prime.
So, very nice. What era of Chris Pine are we talking here?
This was like 10. This is more than 10 years ago.
This is not Jumper. What's the other?
Star Trek had come out. Star Trek. Had come out, right?
The Push. This is Push era.
No, you're thinking Chris Evans.
Chris Evans.
Oh,
that's
I'm thinking Chris.
My
Evans.
Chris.
This is Star Trek. Chris.
Oh, Star Trek. This is a good. Yeah, this is a big Chris.
This is a big Chris.
Yeah. So, and I had like an entourage I used to roll with.
Oh, fuck
so, again, I'm becoming more unlikable as this story.
Yeah, it fits with the theme of the movie.
I'm like,
fine.
I'm like playing a character.
Yeah,
I'm like playing a character, right? I'm just playing a character. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So someone from my entourage goes and talks to someone in Chris Pine's entourage, and then
entourage.
Right. So then me and him like meet up and we're like do a high five and then go back.
Just a logistics question. Yeah. When we are sending representatives from the entourage,
right.
Are you sending the E, or are you sending a lower level? Like, is it a turtle who goes?
It just depends on the situation.
You send your brave and brightest.
I think you send that would be my assumption.
Right. Yeah.
You send your second in command.
Yeah.
You
send the
general. Well, you want someone,
I love that
but look,
this is like a war
here's the
time.
Thing. Here's the thing. You want someone personable, right?
Yeah.
So you don't want someone that's going to like start a fight.
Yeah.
No.
So anyways, but this friend, that he lost it when that happened.
Yeah,
he like literally lost it.
He starts crying and shit.
No, he was like, he just kept like doing shots. He's like, yeah, just so you know, I could still kick your ass, bro. Oh,
of course.
I could still kick your ass, man.
Of course.
You may be like really cool, but I can kick your ass. He just kept saying that over and over again. And I'm like, I got it.
Yeah, cool, man. Cool. That's a typical like, yeah, you beat me in Madden, but you can't fucking play basketball. Or like, you
like,
can't play football
life,
for real.
Yeah.
I felt really, really bad. Yeah. So I was like, and everything I did to try to make this dude feel better, he would get more and more mad.
Of course.
Yeah, the club brings out a side of everybody. You know, it's past your bedtime.
The worst side.
It's dark in there. It's too fucking loud, as our boys point out in this movie. The club is not as good as y'all crack it up to be.
Real quick, just other things about... I want to hit some quick hits about this movie before we move on to fun facts. Did you register that the ending is just word for word the end of Jerry Maguire?
No, I did not.
Really tickled me.
Yeah.
And I definitely imagine that in whenever this movie came out, people would have been howling at that.
Yeah.
And now it's just a reference lost to time.
Is this released in
even
theaters?
The boombox.
Oh, yeah, it was lost to the... Oh,
even
right,
the boombox,
say anything. You're right.
Yeah.
Of course it was released in theaters.
I, like, for some reason was like, would a movie like this be in theaters in the 90s? Were theaters invented by the...
I'm going to Box Office Mojo right now. I want to know how this did.
Oh,
I bet you it didn't do well.
I think it did $30 million.
Yeah, that's what was the budget?
$17 million, I think. Okay. Let me double check.
Today be made for like $500K, and it would be buried in some streaming platform.
Yeah.
Something that I also loved, the disrespect to this movie, is that... So it's on HBO... on Max, and the opening of it, the scan that they have of the Paramount logo,
Filmgate is shaking.
Yeah.
On purpose. Yeah.
Such disregard for this movie. They're like, we're not gonna give the HD upload.
Yeah. Literally the entire beginning isn't in HD, and then it like switches to HD after like the cold open of it. Or like the trailer of it, whatever.
Did you grab my ass?
I don't know. Did I?
Well, from where he's sitting, it's a physical impossibility.
It's physically impossible.
Just had to. The last thing in my notes that I wrote down is that every time I try to wear a chain, I am afraid I look like them.
Oh, okay.
Damn.
No, bro. You got to lean into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are y'all ready for some fun facts?
Fun facts with Zach. Please.
Wait, who is this person? I need to look up her photo so that I can tell this fun fact. This is a good fun fact.
Camby? Are you talking about Camby from the movie?
Yeah, you know all these fun facts, don't you?
Because she's from Clueless, and you're a Clueless guy.
Oh, no, that I did catch, and that I loved. Will Ferrell married his co-star from this film.
What?
Mm-hmm. Vivica Pollan. As the only movie that the two appeared in together, they met in acting class in 95. They decided to just be friends. They did this movie together in 98, got married in 2000.
Wait, who was she?
It up. I think she's who he loses her virginity to.
Is she his wife? Is that girl?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
She was Porsche girl number one.
Porsche girl number one or something. When are Porsches in this film?
No. Yeah, she is. That's the girl that he loses his virginity to.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yep.
Wow.
That is amazing.
Love wins.
Then it was all worth it.
What a good love story.
See? The club brings love together. Zach, you're not the only one.
Whoa, you and Will Ferrell have that in common.
we're like
many ways. Met the club.
Jim Carrey contributed to the script, but was uncredited.
And they throw a reference to him.
They do.
I was like, are they about to? Oh, no.
Okay, it has an 11% Rotten Tomatoes score, but the audience score is 69. Very nice, Rainey. Thank you for including that.
Nice.
Very nice.
That was a joke from Rainey.
By the way, the movie was such a snapshot of Los Angeles, how it used to be.
Yeah. Sunset Boulevard, that was such a trip, too.
Yeah. You're like, whoa, it's clean.
Yeah. And I like the buildings. I've been to like AA meetings in those.
It's like way less billboards down Sunset, also.
Less lights.
Very cool.
It's crazy.
Like, heavy traffic, because even back then there's traffic, but it's like nothing compared to what it is now.
Oh my god. No, right? I'm like, look at all this outdoor shooting on Sunset Boulevard they were doing.
I don't mean to end on a bummer, but this one's making me sad.
Uh-oh.
So this is according to Chris Kattan. After they completed the film, he and Will Sparrell.
Say it ain't so, Zach.
He and Will Ferrell didn't speak again until the 23rd season of SNL, because there was an on-set relationship between Kattan and Amy Heckler.
Oh. Heckerling. Which
Not
one was
cocaine.
She?
Oh. She's the producer.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Director of Clueless. They worked together on SNL, but then Ferrell left at the end of season 27, and they've never collaborated since.
I'm saying there's something going on with Chris Kattan that we don't know about, y'all.
Yeah,
he fucked
Amy.
Why did that break up him and why?
Yeah, why did that bother him? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Something's going on.
Yeah.
Something's going on. I'm starting that rumor right here.
It's kind of wild.
It is a bummer. It's a bummer.
You know what also is a bummer is that the thought that I just had of like, the inevitable Super Bowl commercial with the two of them as old guys reenacting this. Like
but
that,
it's going to have to be CGI or like, you know, green screen.
Oh, they're not
going to
be in the same room.
They won't be in the same room.
The closest we'll ever get to it.
Oh, you could totally do a green screen. Yeah.
Kenan and Kel, they did it. Maybe we can make it happen with them.
Get the boys back together.
Yeah. Just for a commercial. Why not?
Yeah.
I just want to shout out that I think this might be the greatest soundtrack to a movie ever.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Slaps.
Yes.
Yeah.
I still listen to this music.
Yeah. Oh, if this goes on the club, which it still does.
You have just like
I've never listened to modern music. Just whatever, but this is like timeless.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You really are. You're like, when was this ever made? Who made this? I don't know, but I love it. Everyone's dancing to these songs in this movie.
Also, like, I don't know what was going on with like the royalties back then, but I feel like people were more lax with like having actual songs in movies. Because I remember Life and Times of Ginger. Is that it?
Why are you looking at me? I don't know what you're saying.
Do you know that show? As Told by Ginger.
The cartoon. That's a show I know.
As Told by Ginger had like Gray a full Macy Gray theme song. And
that
I'm like,
come on, was told me.
It wasn't that they were more lax back then, because I experienced kind of the tail end of this.
Mm-hmm.
But you used to get like an actual bump from the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Right. So if they sold, because they would sell. Big sales. Oh, okay.
They were big sales. And then on top of that, like, you'd put it in the trailer and people would go to the movie because, remember the movie Car Wash?
Mm-hmm. Because the Car Wash was the song Car Wash
right,
was in it. Yeah.
Right. Wow. So, like, the soundtrack used to be a driver of box office.
Wow.
Hilarious.
That stopped really with our generation, because we're like, So licensing costs didn't really go down to match that, right? Because if you want a Rolling Stone song, it's going to cost you the same amount, but you're not going to get like more people watching it for the song.
Okay, so it's just less worth it.
But
now,
I do feel like songs becoming iconic in trailers is like starting to come back. Like, I'm just thinking of Jordan Peele's Talk to Me, like that song now. I'm like, oh my God. Like, in a way, it's showing itself where I'm like, that's the Talk to Me song.
Yeah. The hardest I laughed in this entire movie is they're in an elevator and there's an elevator cover version of What Is Love.
That, yeah.
1,000%.
Just that very slowly bob their heads.
Because it's they're being reverent to the classical tones of this version.
Followed by a line that I didn't realize was from this movie, because I've had a douchey person earnestly say it to me, which was they don't hit on girls in the elevator. And he's like, why get a burger for lunch when you got a steak waiting for you back at home? And I was surprised it was from this movie. Yeah. So I've heard someone say that to me.
I've heard that. I thought that they were referencing something.
Maybe they were. Okay.
I guess it's real. I don't know.
They also just have the song Bada Bada Ba Deep Dap Da Day.
That's a great song.
I love it.
Yeah.
Amber, like that. Just go listen to the soundtrack. It's just awesome.
And now it's time for us to decide, is this movie a pleasure, a guilty pleasure, or just plain guilty? Addy, I'm gonna give you the floor. Really tell people why they should watch this film.
There's pleasure, there's guilty pleasure. And then there's just high fucking art. Right? And when you look at high art, it's not revered at its time, right? Like Moby Dick, the shit people will remember in 1,000 years. Like when Moby Dick came out, no one gave a fuck. They're like, this is some bullshit. Fuck Moby Dick.
Yeah.
Right? Now they teach that shit in school.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to teach this shit in school.
Yeah.
Film
right?
school?
When the, not film school. Like, I'm talking school. Elementary school.
Like English
school.
Class.
Yeah,
in high school.
Like when the AI overlords are kind of jacking the kids into the school and they're like, like, they're going to be like, and this is a capsule.
This is a screenshot. This is like the fucking experience.
Picasso. Yeah. This is like the Picasso painting of this time period.
Yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's fair.
You're very convincing with your words.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could actually see that.
Yeah.
Or someone in the back was like, okay, and when the kids need to be plugged in for school and they ask, what were the late 90s, early aughts like? We're going to play them Night at the Roxbury.
Yeah. What was it like to be too cool for the world?
Yeah. That guy's the programmer.
But then they're like,
the
they're able to bend the world to them, right?
They had the club at the end.
This
of the
is team? Like the being there, the
kind of like the Matrix.
Yeah, totally. It's a little bit like the Matrix. I think that they're the Neo of early Los Angeles.
They don't even need to get into the club, right? They don't need to fucking dodge bullets or get into the club
because
they
club
can make their
the
own
outside.
Club, right?
Yeah.
They are the club.
They are the club.
Yeah.
And the club was friendship all along.
Goddamn. Addy, you have a new show on Netflix.
Tell us about it.
It's called Captain Laserhawk.
Great name.
Blood Dragon Remix. So it's essentially 1984.
Great year.
Yeah.
God damn it.
It's a brave new world. It's dystopian science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
How much head bobbing is there?
Yeah.
A lot.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was actually heavily inspired by Night at the Rock. It's like basically if you take Night at the Roxbury, but then you take the two brothers and you put them in a dystopian hellscape.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
In an alternate timeline. Because Captain Laserhawk is set in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's set in an alternate 90s, right? Yeah. And America's just become one giant nightclub called Eden.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're just fighting throughout the nightclub the whole time.
Totally.
Trying to get in.
Yeah, they're trying to get in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And and at the end, they bend the club to their will and create their own club.
I love where things are where things come from. Like, just it being inspired by Night at the Roxbury. That's so fucking funny. That's so fun.
It's like...
If you liked Night at the Roxbury, you might like...
No.
Other things like this.
If you like Night at the Roxbury, you will love Captain Laserhawk.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Check it out.
You got all episodes streaming now. And where can people find you?
Me?
Yeah.
You don't need to find me. Just
normally have people on here that want to be found, but...
Yeah. I don't want to be found.
You want your show to be watched.
Like, these dudes, these and gals are dope.
Aw.
Keep sending positive energy to them.
Oh, yeah.
Support independent creators them who've built a media ecosystem, which is so fucking awesome, right? That's fucking awesome. So support this channel.
Wow, that ended up being advertisement for us for your shout out. Thank you.
Wowie. All right. Well, I had a feeling, but after that, you were invited back anytime.
Hey! Really?
Nice.
Yeah, no, I need more passionate films coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm at Corn Data on all the things.
Kelsey Dara on all the things.
And Garrick Bernard on all the things.
And until next time.
What is love? Maybe
we gotta get it. You gotta be careful because you have a steel neck.
I do have a steel neck.
Is that why you're so good at the head bob?
Yes,
I think it's because I'm always leaning to the left, so I can. It's fair. It's like
it's your chronic pain.
It's my chronic pain. Wow, this is actually relieving the pain.